We're doing Parshat Miketz. We'll do a quick overview of the parsha and then review it. So, Yosef's been in jail another 2 years after he interprets the dream of the butler. And Pharaoh has a dream. You can't have a question just yet.
I do.
So, okay, we got to finish the overview and then we'll take questions. So, Pharaoh dreams he's standing by the Nile. 7 cows come out. And then 7 skinny cows come out. And the skinny cows consume the fat cows. And he awakens. And then he dreams a second dream. 7 stalks. 7 healthy stalks. And then 7 thin stalks. And the thin stalks overtake the thick stalks. And he awakens. And he gets up in the morning and he's very upset because he had an interpretation in the dream and he forgot it. So he calls the sorcerers and he tells them the dream. And everyone offers their interpretation and Pharaoh knows none of them are right. And then the butler tells Pharaoh, I have to mention my failures, my past dark history. When you threw me down into the dungeon, so I was there with the baker. We both had a dream one night. And a young Hebrew lad, servant, was there. He told us an interpretation and they all came true. So Pharaoh summons Yosef and he tells him, I hear you can interpret dreams. You just hear a dream, you interpret it. And Yosef says, no, 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 not me. God should answer Pharaoh. And Pharaoh tells Yosef, my dream was, I'm standing by the Nile and I see 7 fat cows. And the worst looking cows come out after them and they consume them. And you couldn't tell that they had consumed them. And they looked so bad, just like initially. He adds details that didn't happen in the dream. And then he says, I saw another dream. I got up. I dreamt again. 7 stalks, very full. 7 thin stalks. Consume the 7 full stalks. And I tell the sorcerers here, no one can interpret it. And Yosef tells Pharaoh, well, your dream was 1. Yosef has it easy, right? He knows 7. What's a 7 in his mind? His father worked 7 years for Rachel. So 7 is an obvious one for him. All the sorcerers, they're figuring out, you're going to have 7 daughters, you're going to fight 7 wars, all kinds of interpretations. For Yosef, it's easy. So he tells them, oh, they all represent years. The 7 cows represent 7 years of plenty. The 7 bad stalks represent 7 years of famine. It's all one dream. And God's telling you what's about to happen. There are going to be 7 years of plenty, and afterwards 7 years of famine, where everyone will forget all the plenty, and the famine will destroy the land. And then you had the double dream to tell you that it's about to happen. It's to stress the point that God's about to start. So Pharaoh, you got to get someone smart, with understanding, to take control of Egypt and collect taxes. And Pharaoh tells his servants, you ever see someone as smart as this guy? And they all agree not, so they appoint him. He's in charge of everything. And Yosef takes control, and he's 30 years old. He's taken control of the greatest army of the country. He's taken control of the economy of the country. And he sets up storage houses, and he brilliantly taxes to the point where the Egyptians are still faithful to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh develops tremendous storage houses. He's brilliant in configuring the storage houses so that the food doesn't rot. Pharaoh has him marry Potiphar's daughter. This is a way of showing that Yosef was really innocent. He did nothing wrong. And he has 2 sons, Menashe and Ephraim. The years of famine begin, and Egypt has no problem. When Egypt runs out of bread, so they come to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh says, go talk to Yosef. Yosef starts selling them the food from the storage houses, and people from the surrounding countries come, and Yosef sells the food. Yaakov tells his sons, we shouldn't be different, let's go buy food. When they're brought, Yosef summons them, tells them, "You're spies. What'd you come here from Canaan for?" Throws them into jail. After 3 days, he says, "You know, if you're telling the truth, leave one brother in jail and go back home. And you tell me there's another brother, so bring him back." And the brothers start talking to another. They say, "It's all our fault. You know why this is happening to us? Because our brother was crying and we weren't willing to listen to him." And Reuven says, "I told you guys not to hurt the kid. You didn't listen to me." And Yosef goes to another room and weeps. And he tells them, "Okay, so leave me Shimon, and then you'll come back with that other brother and everything will be okay." They're on their way home. They open their sacks. They see the money's back in their sacks. They say, "We paid. How'd the money get back in the sacks?" They're very scared. They come back home and they see all 12 of them have their money back in the sacks, all 10 of them, all 9 of them. So they tell Yaakov, you know, the man, he knew everything. What a genius. He knew where we were from. He knew our names. He knew everything about us. And he said we shouldn't show our faces without the little brother. And Yaakov says, "No way. I lost Yosef. Now I lost Shimon. I'm going to send Benjamin. No way." Reuven says, "You could kill my 2 sons if I don't bring them back." And Yaakov says, "What kind of promise is that? They're my grandchildren." "No way. You're a fool. I'm not giving you my son." And then Yehuda tells the brothers, "Wait, he'll get hungry. Everyone will get hungry. He'll have no choice. Then we'll have who to talk to." Yaakov sees the food is running out. He tells the kids, "Go back to Egypt." And they say, "You know, the guy warned us not to show our faces without Benjamin's. If you send them, we're going. And if not, we're not going." So Yaakov says, "What'd you do this for? What'd you tell him there's another brother?" And they say, "You know, he asked us all these questions. We had no idea that he'd come to this." Yehuda says, "If I don't bring him back, I give up my portion in the world to come. But better give him to me, because otherwise everyone's going to die. We could have been there and back already." And Yaakov blesses them. He gives them from the good fruits, and they come back down to Egypt. They come to Egypt. They're quickly summoned to the king's palace. And they're all nervous. Maybe the Egyptians have it against them. They say they didn't pay. Maybe that's why. And they right away tell the guy, "Hey, before you take us in, there must have been a mistake last time. We found our money was back in our sacks." And the man says, "Don't worry. I got the money. Your God must have given you a gift. No problem." So they're summoned to Yosef's palace. Yosef gives them all to eat. He sets them up at the tables, fancy tables. And he sits down with Benjamin. And he starts talking to them about their history. And they have a big party. And the next morning he sends them off. He puts their money back in their sacks. And throughout the party he keeps tapping his goblet and telling them all kinds of things. And he says, "Oh, my goblet tells me that you two used to sleep on a bunk together. My goblet tells me that you always used to pick on him. My goblet tells me that as little kids you used to have nicknames for one another." And he keeps knocking on the goblet and telling them, "You know what my goblet tells me about you guys?" And every time he does this, and at the end of the meal he's sitting next to Benjamin, he has his officer stick the goblet into Benjamin's sack. The brothers leave the city. They're just out of the city. And Yosef sends his son Menashe with the troops. They come charging after the brothers. "What's wrong with you guys? We treat you so well. How could you do such a thing to us?" The brothers say, "What do you mean? We're so honest. We even brought back the money that you gave us by mistake last time. We're the most honest of people." And the general Menashe says, "Liar. How could it be? Hey, we treated you so well and you steal the king's goblet? Don't you know he's so smart he'll know you stole the goblet?" They say, "What do you mean? We're no way. And by no hide law, whoever stole the goblet gets the death penalty. Just find it. Here, you're welcome to search." So he knows where it is, right? So he starts searching by the eldest. And each sack, he says, "You know what? Nothing doing here." Next one, "Oh, you're nothing doing here." Finally, they reach Benjamin. They open the sack. "Ah, here's the goblet. Ah, you were sitting next to the king. It makes sense you'd be the thief." All the brothers start smacking Benjamin between the shoulder blades. "What's wrong with you? Your mother stole, now you stole. What'd you do to us?" And Benjamin is quiet. He's not saying anything. They tear their clothing, and they had made a promise. They said, "You know, the one by whom you find the goblet, he will get killed and we'll all be your slaves." They come back, downtrodden, back to Yosef. And Yehuda leads the way. Yosef says, "What's wrong with you? Didn't you know I'd figure something out like this? Don't you know I'm so smart? I'd know something like this." And Yehuda says, "What can we say? God obviously found our sin. We're all prepared to be your servants, us and the one who the goblet was caught by." Now notice he switches the deal. Step one, let's bring them over from giving the death penalty to Benjamin to "we'll all be your slaves." So Yehuda takes step one. He says, "We're all willing to be your slaves." And Yosef says, "No, God forbid, I wouldn't do that. Only the guy who stole the goblet is going to stay as my servant. The rest of you go home in peace." Close the screen. The reading is over for this week. And with that, we end this week's Torah reading. And we'll pick up here next week, but now let's see more depth as to what's really going on. Yes?
So, Yaakov was pretty sad that Yosef is gone. And I know it makes sense, from what I've heard, why there was 2 years added on to Yosef's imprisonment. But those are 2 years that Yaakov spends mourning, crying his eyes out.
Excellent question for a Thursday night. Being that we're so short on time and such a loaded parsha, we're going to make the following deal. Any question that takes more than 60 seconds has to be pushed off to Thursday night. Yes?
Do you want to go through this huge metamorphosis? Last week, this is definitely Thursday night, but the situation with Tamar, again, is, odd. Now, he says to his father, you get killed, like you said, take my children if something happens. It's just both.
That was Reuven, that wasn't you, no?
Oh, that was Reuven.
That wasn't Yehuda, yeah.
I thought it was
Yehuda said, I'm giving over my portion in the world to come if I don't make it back with him. Yes.
Okay, two questions. Less than 60 seconds each. You said Menashe was the general, so that means he was in on the whole ruse.
Correct.
He knows that those were his uncles.
Correct.
Okay, second question is, and I asked this earlier today, but not just hearing about what Yosef was going on and how he was able to play this whole ruse and kind of manipulate the situation with the brothers. He went before Pharaoh and he said you should have a wise person to oversee everything. Did he have in mind himself the whole
100%, time? Yes. Okay. Let's begin our parsha. Let's begin. So, Yosef's been in prison for 10 years. And one of the phenomenal lessons we learn from Yosef is how honest a person has to be, how hopeful a person has to be, and even when life seems like it's dishing us a really tough deal, not to give up. Yosef did what was right, and he was thrown into slavery. Yosef did what was right again, and he was thrown into prison. And the solution is not obvious. Meaning sometimes in life we have hardships, and we know it's going to be over. A woman has a difficult pregnancy. She knows at the end of 9 months, it's over. You have a child that's getting up at night. In a year or two, the kid's going to outgrow it. There are certain hardships in life where you figure, okay, it's tough, it'll pass. And then you have hardships where you don't know if it's ever ending. Yosef's thrown into the dungeon. There's no time limit to his period in the dungeon. He doesn't have any relatives checking up on him. He doesn't have any lawyers fighting on his behalf. This is the Jonathan Pollard of the day, and he has his whole life in front of him. He's in this filthy Egyptian dungeon, and year in, year out, nothing's going right, so to speak. Here he was, enticed to commit adultery, and the woman tells him, no one will know, and he does what's right, and the product of it is he's thrown to jail. So after a week, Yosef can say, well, it'll get better. After a month, he could say it'll get better. After 2 years, is he still saying it's going to get better? After 10 years, is he still saying it's going to get better? Or is he saying, I don't know what God wants of me, but I still have to be faithful. I have to be ethical. I have to be moral. And I know that God runs the show. And even if I don't understand what's going on here, I have to do my end of the deal. That's very hard. But that's a lesson for life. Very often we give ourselves outs. We tell ourselves, I kept Shabbos for 3 months and I still haven't found a job. Why should I still keep Shabbos? Really? We're going to tell God how to run the show? I've been celibate for 3 years and I haven't found a wife. I remember a guy posted this on Facebook. I've been celibate 3 years and I haven't found a wife. I'm celebrating. And you should have seen the responses his friends told him. So you have second thoughts? 3 years and you still don't have a wife? So what are you celebrating for? And I wrote him, Kol hakavod to you, mazal tov. Go, keep going strong. It's a big deal. But you know what? We try to make deals with God. We think we can control God. And one of the lessons we see in Tanakh is that we don't know his paths, we don't know his ways. As smart as we are, as pious as we are, we don't have any guarantees as to how it's going to play itself out. We have a guarantee he is running the show, and we have a responsibility to live up to our end of the deal. Very tough. Yosef's in jail 10 years. He doesn't speak the language, so I guess over time he learned it. But for 10 years he's in jail. And although we know the story plays itself out well for Yosef, he didn't know that. So he had a dream, that he would be king. What did he think would happen with that dream? Does he turn back on his history and say, let me be a good Egyptian? Does he turn back on his history and say, you know what? I'm stuck here in Chutzarts. It's been 10 years. No one's come for me. It's been 13 years. 3 years in the house of Potiphar. 10 years in prison. And no one's come. Where is my father? Doesn't he care over me? Where are my brothers? Didn't they have a change of heart? 13 years I'm gone. No one comes looking for me. So Yosef could have said, leave God. Let me lead my life. It's each man for himself. Let me see how I get out of here. No. Benny, we're putting a pause on questions. We got 20 minutes. We got a whole parsha. But you and I are walking home together. We'll talk. In Malaso. So.
He's in jail.
Joseph's in jail. What?
No relief in sight. That's the way he left it.
Right? And so the day comes. He goes to sleep at night. And it seems like the night isn't over. He has a dream. And in this dream, they speak to him. And they tell him, we want to give you optimized Ulpan class. Pay attention, young man. What are you teaching me? We're going to teach you how to talk a few different languages. Now listen closely. And they start teaching him. So the angel Gabriel comes to him in a dream and gives him Ulpan in 70 different languages. Tomorrow's a big day. You're going to have to know this. Listen closely. And they start teaching him how to speak different languages. Now, the Medrash makes it fantastic, right? The way Midrashim do. The angel Gabriel came and taught him 70 languages. We could suggest maybe that the Medrash is using Midrashic terminology. But what the Medrash really means to say is that in prison for 10 years, he was developing his knowledge of 70 languages. You know, there were all kinds of people in that jail. Whatever, let's stick to the Medrash. Gabriel comes to him at night and says, let me teach you, son. You better know these languages. The next morning, Pharaoh's had his fantastic dream and he's very upset. And he keeps threatening, why isn't anyone giving me an interpretation? And the butler is getting nervous. If anyone else tells Pharaoh that Yosef was such a good interpreter, and Pharaoh's going to find out that the butler knew all along, he's finished, he's a dead man. But he hates the Jew. The last thing he wants to do is do a favor to the Jew who helped him. And he's seething that he's cornered. Now he's going to have to come and do a good turn to the Jew. And not only that, if Yosef comes to power, what's going to happen to the butler? You know, Yosef's going to say, hey buddy, we made a deal. I told you I'm helping you get out of here, and you're supposed to put in a good word by Pharaoh for me. So the butler figures, to the last minute, I'm going to try to do the Jew in. And the butler comes to Pharaoh and says, you know, let me tell you something from the history. There was this filthy, stinking lad there in prison with me. You know, he really, he was a slave by Egyptian law. A slave can never have a position of power. He's a Hebrew. The Egyptians despise the Hebrews because the Hebrews will eat the meat that the Egyptians worship. So he's putting in every word he can to put down Yosef. Yosef's already 30 years old. What's he calling him a lad for? He's trying to get Pharaoh to discount Yosef. And he says, you know what? He interpreted and it came true. You never know. Look what happened. So Pharaoh has Yosef summoned. And Yosef's clothing are changed, brought before him. And they give him a haircut. You know, a person in jail, his beard is growing long, his hair is growing long. You ever see those pictures of Pollard? Right? That's the way a person in prison looks. The hair is growing long, the beard is growing long. He doesn't get to shower as often as a normal person would. He doesn't get to change his clothes. They give him royal clothing. He's going to come before the king. He should look respectable. They cut his nails. They're rushing him. So the simple reading of the verse is that Pharaoh's waiting. They rush him. The Kutzker Rebbe has a beautiful insight. He says, why was Yosef rushed out of the pit? He says, in heaven, whenever there's a decree that a person has to suffer in this world, there's an exact time that a person has to suffer. And when that time is over, the suffering has to end. So in heaven, they decided that Yosef would be in jail those 8 years, and then he sinned and he got another 2, so 10 years. But when those 10 years were up, Yosef had to leave prison. So in heaven, the calculation was, don't let him suffer a second more than he has to. Get him out of there as fast as possible. So they rush Yosef out of the pit. They rush him to a barber. They rush him to embalm him. They rush him to shower him. They rush him to give him all the treatments he needs to be ready to be king. And now he's brought before the king. Because that second, it's over. That's an important thought. Because one of the concepts we're going to see as a recurring theme in our story is how quick the picture changes. One second Yosef's the lowest of the low, the next second he's the highest of the high. One second the brothers are the lowest of the low, the next second they're the highest of the high. We're going to see how things can change very rapidly, and this is part of the message of the story. When a person is in a difficult situation, they feel like it's never going to end. And one of the lessons we learn from Yosef is how quickly things can change. Quick story. It was Rosh Chodesh Shavat, about 9 or 10 years ago. A very good friend of mine was engaged, and for the third time in his life, the girl broke the engagement with him. This was the third girl to break an engagement with him. And the guy was in his late 20s, he was about 28 years old. Third, Shlishi. The guy was 28 years old, and he left me a note in which he said, "I'm finished, I've had it." And he signed the note, that's how I remember it, was Rosh Chodesh Shvat, Rosh Chodesh Sharui Belo Tova. That's an acronym. The Talmud says, he who is unwed is Sharui Belo Tova, immersed in a sense of not good. So that's he did a play on words, that's how I remember it was Rosh Chodesh Shvat. And I get the note, I go up to where he's sitting. He went to the far corner of the women's section. He was sitting there alone learning. And he said to me, "That's it. I decided I'm becoming a hermit. I decided I'm sitting in the corner. I've had it." He says, "I'm going to sit in the corner and learn. What can I do? I tried. And this is the third time. And what can I do? You know, I'm finished." So I said, "Let's go for a walk." We left the yeshiva, we went for a walk, and one of the things I told him was, maybe you're supposed to marry a girl who isn't yet dating. Maybe you're supposed to marry someone so young that you haven't met her yet, and all these are trials you have to pass until you find the right one, and she's just not yet on the market. That's why you haven't met her yet. But take it easy. You don't know. Right? She's not yet three, right? So I told him, Yitzchak Avinu. Yitzchak hits the age of 30, and his wonderful wife Rebecca wasn't born yet. And at age 30, he could wonder. And at age 37, he could really wonder. And now she's born finally, when he's 37 years old, right? So in life, you don't know how it works. You can't give up on life. And we ended our conversation. I gave him a pack of chocolate. I said, every time you feel bitter, you take a piece of chocolate, you suck on it, and then you go back to learning and put a smile on your face. To make a long story short, 3-4 months later, I get a phone call. A woman says, "I want you to tell me about this guy." So I tell her, and she says, "I'll tell you why I'm concerned. My daughter's dating him. She just started. She's 17 years old. She just started dating. There's 11 years between them, and they think they're getting married. And I'm not sure if it makes sense with an 11-year gap." And they're happily married today with like 4 or 5 kids. So I said it as an example. You know, you never know. But a half a year later, he was married.
I told him what he know too, that he went to learn afterwards. People would be pretty despondent to whatever. He goes hiding out there. That says something about him.
Yeah. It's a fine Talmud Chacham. So I'm just saying, there's this concept, you don't give up. Even though things seem tough and you don't know when things will get better, Yosef had no guarantee he'd ever get out of jail. Yosef could have spent his days wondering, am I going to die here? No one will even know where I died. Is that going to be the end of one of the tribes, the one who had fantastic dreams? Have my brothers succeeded in doing me in? You know, my brother said, "That's it. Let's go see where your dreams are, dreamer. Let's see you now." But Yosef doesn't stop. And he's ethical and he's kind. And when he sees two people in prison, non-Jews, Egyptians, who don't treat him too nicely, but when they seem upset, he stops and asks them, "Hey guys, what's wrong?" And he listens to them and he interprets their dreams. And that That's Yosef. The righteous person who is righteous wherever he's at. You know, people sometimes have a challenge. You go to a place where no one knows you. How are you going to behave? Are you going to drop the wrapper on the floor? I always feel the other way around. If I'm in a place where no one knows me, so I don't have a dark history, here I could be a big tzaddik. I have a fresh start. But we have to ask ourselves, how am I behaving when no one's looking? Yosef HaTzadik. That's Yosef. And so then Pharaoh summons him. And when Pharaoh tells him, I hear you really know how to interpret dreams, Yosef is so tempted. He knows what's about to happen. And Yosef should really say, you know, you could say I have a bit of a knack for it. He doesn't say that. He says there's a God, and he's the one to answer. Now, Pharaoh could have just said, you telling me there's a God? Get out of here. But Yosef sticks to his guns. After everything Yosef's seen, that doesn't scare him. Yosef is going to be honest and tell the truth. It's not my brilliance. If I'm willing to try, but it's God who answers these questions. And then Pharaoh tells him the dream, and Yosef catches right away what's going on. And so Yosef tells Pharaoh, God has told you something. God has told you what's yet to come, what's coming. And Yosef comes here to help. And from here our sages learn that the Jews historically have been a source of blessing for every nation to whom they've been exiled. Be it taking the position of the chief economist, be it advising the king, the Jews throughout our history, our sages say, look at Mordechai in the city of Shushan. He knows they're about to kill the wicked Ahasuerus. And what he does is he sends word to Ahasuerus and tells him, you should know they're trying to poison your coffee. Okay, it's not coffee in those days, it was his wine. But bottom line, there's a certain faithfulness that Chazal expected a Jew to have in whatever country he's in. So this was true in Russia, this was true in the United States, this was true in Shushan, and this was true for Yosef with Pharaoh. If Yosef sees an opportunity to help, he helps, even though Yosef doesn't know how it's going to end. So our tradition is that Pharaoh had a throne on top of 70 steps. Yeah, every language you spoke, you ascended another step. Yosef knows all 70 languages, he ascends all 70 steps. He's standing there talking face to face to Pharaoh. And then he says, but there's another one. And Pharaoh goes, shh. There's Hebrew, which Pharaoh didn't know how to speak. So Yosef's on the top rung. And when Pharaoh tells him, I'm going to appoint you as king, Pharaoh tells him, promise me, you'll never reveal that you know one more language than I do. Because Egyptian law prohibited the person from being king if anyone knew any more languages than he did. So technically, Pharaoh's kingdom was in danger. But Pharaoh knew that if Yosef tried to make any turmoil, he could have him beheaded. But it took a few years until Pharaoh was so confident, as we see, he gives Yosef full control of everything. Yosef had the army. Yosef was very faithful, which was, again, the hallmark of the Jew throughout our history. I'm sorry, we got 5 minutes and a whole parsha. So Yosef arranges the storage houses. And he figures out exactly how much he can tax that the Egyptians won't revolt, which is a brilliance in its own right. He figures out exactly how to store in each location so that the food doesn't rot. Another brilliance in its own right. He figures out a numeric system, which the Egyptians don't have. Their numeric system goes up to a certain number, and he has to keep records. They don't have numbers to keep records that high. And he figures out ways to keep records even where their numbers don't run. So Yosef arranges everything. And now the 7 years of famine come. And Yosef tells the people, we're in danger. If we don't give food out, so then we'll be attacked because everyone's hungry. If we give food out, we have to ensure that we protect our food and protect our economy and protect our country. So no one can enter Egypt with any weapons. That's number one. You leave your weapons at the door. Number two, everyone entering Egypt has to undergo questioning. And we keep a record of every person, who they are, what country they're from, who their father is. No one's allowed to take out of Egypt more than they can carry on one donkey. And no one's allowed to resell the food from Egypt. Yosef publicizes the prices of Egyptian food to ensure that there won't become a pirate market outside. Yosef warns anyone, if there are warning signs throughout Egypt, if you resell Egyptian food, we will not sell to you again. We're selling to help people live, not to allow people to open up commerce at our expense. Our food is precious, we're not taking advantage of that, we're selling at a fair price. But you have to be fair with us. We will sell and we will maintain that price. Yosef would have his border patrol interview every person who entered Egypt and ask the person, what prices did you hear were selling? Because Yosef maintained the secret army to ensure that people weren't fabricating prices, to maintain the market price. One of the favors Yosef does to the world is he publishes the market price in Egypt and he sends it out internationally. Yosef wants to ensure that people who need food can get food, but that there aren't whole markets being set up at the expense of the Egyptians. So he limits what you can export. You have to write down your name, your father's name, the country you came from, and all kinds of personal details when you enter the city. And every night, Yosef goes over the records. He wants to know how much food was sold to each country, who came from each country to collect. No one may collect on behalf of someone else. You're allowed one donkey when you leave, so you can buy for your family. Someone else wants to come, let them send a representative of the family. And those are the ways that Yosef protects the commerce. Yosef has a hidden agenda. He wants to see his brothers. Now the brothers going down to Egypt say to one another, Yosef's down there, let's go find him. Yaakov tells them, you guys are good looking young men. Don't go in through one gate. Come in from 10 different sides of the city. People shouldn't look at you and say, what gorgeous men. And then they'll be jealous of you. So the brothers come in through 10 different gates. Yosef looks at the records at night. He tells his guards, summon those 10 men. When they come to buy food from you, tell them I prohibit selling you food. That can't happen. What Yosef does is he closes all the warehouses in Egypt the next day, except for one. And on that one, he tells the man in charge, he tells him, here are the names of the 10 people. When they come, you don't give them a morsel of food. You send them to me. So the 10 brothers come, and one by one, they're picked out and sent to the Yosef's chambers. When they unite as 10, Yosef comes out to see them. He looks at them, they look at him. He recognizes them, they don't recognize him. Now he's dressed up as this Egyptian emperor. They're not prepared to see him. And he doesn't talk Hebrew. He talks Egyptian. He has a translator standing there. Happens to be his son Menashe. And he tells the translator, tell them if you're 10 brothers, why'd you enter through 10 gates? So the brothers are taken aback. Yosef says, tell them they're spies. There's no logical reason they should enter from 10 different angles of the city. Obviously, they're planning on attacking our city. So the brothers say, no, we're not spies. We came looking for our brother. We have a long-lost brother here in Egypt. We went searching for him. So Yosef says, ask them where they've been. I sent my men searching for them. All day, they couldn't find them. So the brothers say, we went throughout the brothels. Yosef says, brothels, betzonot. Ask them why they're going to brothels if they're such respectable men. Why do they think their brother's there? So they say, well, that brother, that's where we expected to find him. So Yosef says, throw him into prison. 3 days they spend in prison. He wants them to ponder. Yosef is not into getting revenge. Yosef has one thought. He has two thoughts in mind. Thought number one, he knows the Egyptian exile is about to begin. And if the brothers end up in shackles bowing to him the way he dreamed, then that would mean that the Egyptians have taken the rest of his family and imprisoned them and turned them into slaves in his lifetime. When we have dreams or when we have prophecies, so then they can be brought to fruition in different ways. Every prophecy has multiple levels of interpretation. If a prophecy turns out true in one way, then that can preclude its happening another way. If the brothers can come into Egypt and bow to Yosef, perhaps they won't have to come down a different way. That's part one. Part two, it seems obvious that they are going to have to descend to Egypt. In which case, there's a big problem. There's no way the people of Israel can last in Egypt if they do not unite. If one does not help the other, if they do not realize that their higher goal is to be there for one another, then how can they come down to Egypt and last? If they're unified, then they could withstand the exile. If they're divided, how is that going to happen? So Yosef wants to bring the brothers to a point where they're super dedicated to one another. And when he tells them, I'm imprisoning Shimon, no one stands up. They should have said, how could we leave without Shimon? No way. They don't say that. They remain confident. Okay, we'll get him back next time. Yosef says, huh, did you learn the lesson or didn't you? And so Yosef turns up the heat. And he will constantly turn up the heat until he brings the brothers to a point in next week's parasha where the brothers say, we'll kill everyone. We're not giving up on our brothers. And that's where he wants to bring them. So each time he takes it another step until he can bring them to a point where they're ready to risk all their lives on behalf of one brother. Once they're willing to do that, they've rectified what they've done by selling him, and he says, game over, let me tell you who I am. But right now, he still has to help them recognize that what they did was wrong. At this point, no one has said, hey, we were wrong to sell Yosef. They say, hey, dad is crying, let's bring him back. We didn't realize it would play itself out this way. But no one's saying we were wrong. And when Yosef is done with them, they will come to the point where they will say, we were wrong. And they will come to the point where they're going to say, well, we'll all die, but we won't let you take one of our brothers, which is the point he needs to bring them to.